Good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central once again. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart, alongside Brian Burke. Elliot Friedman joins us here in a couple of moments. We'll get into some of the issues around the NHL. Maple Leafs play tonight, facing off against the Edmonton Oilers. Maple Leafs having won back-to-back games against the Calgary Flames most recently. Berkey, Stewie, good afternoon, gentlemen. Before we get into the action tonight, and 14 games on the board, busy Thursday night around the NHL, as we all know. We're going to lead off by talking to Elliot about the Jim Rutherford situation with the Pittsburgh Penguins. But, I mean, Berkey, as a GM, you're the closest that any of us are to this position. How much of a surprise was that for you yesterday afternoon when the Penguins announced that Rutherford had resigned and David Morehouse talking about, you know, citing personal reasons, and we know that it's not a health issue? What have you been able to cobble together in the near 24 hours since this decision was made?
Well, I bet you Elliot has more information on this than I do. I've texted with Jimmy, and he sounds good, sounds excited about his next move. But it doesn't add up.
In what sense doesn't it add up?
Well, I talked about this on television last night, and there's a dichotomy in the hockey world. Mm-hmm. And there's a clear split among people who think that Pittsburgh is still in their window to win again, and people who believe that they're not. And that leads me to conclude the same type of discussion took place with ownership in Pittsburgh. And the rumor is it was about a trade that Jimmy was prepared to move Chris Letang, and ownership said no. So I don't know if that's true or not. But it's clear that you've got to be buying or selling in the NHL. My theory was always we're getting good fast or we're getting bad fast. And I'm guessing that led to whether Jimmy's traded and acted as if they're still in their window. If the Letang story is true, that's very different. Right. But to this point, like, they don't have any picks coming up in the next draft. They've tried to win. They've tried to be competitive. They took on the Matheson contract. So to me, Jimmy was thinking, we're still in the window. We're going to go for it. But clearly there's a split. Because for one, as much respect as I have for Jimmy, I don't have Pittsburgh in the window. I think their time has passed with that group.
Yeah. Well, you look at the playoffs, and it's back-to-back sweeps, one at the hand of the Islanders, one at the hand of the Montreal Canadiens. Stewie, how did you greet this news yesterday?
Yeah, I think something's a little bit fishy. But the one thing I can say about GMJR is that he beats, you know, he goes to the beat of his own drum. And Berkey uses the analogy, you know, two sets of hands on the steering wheel, where when he's in charge, he's in charge. No one really tells him what to do. So I could see this be a conflict of interest, saying, well, you know what, we want to go in this direction. He's saying, nope, we're staying the course. So for me, he's a great GM. He gave me an opportunity, 2-year deal in Carolina. And remember, originally he was only supposed to go to Pittsburgh. I think it was for the 1 year. He was going to be an interim, and he ended up staying there for 6 years. So he's a great GM. He's done some great work winning two cups in Pittsburgh. I'm excited to see what the next step is for him.
Does it perhaps, Brian, underscore this idea that maybe more than ever now, managing upwards is a pretty valuable skill for a GM?
Well, I'm probably a bad guy to ask about that. I have the NHL record. I've been the GM of 5 teams. It's a record that nobody wants. My guess is, looking at this from the outside, and I know Jimmy well, I really respect him and like him. He's a really good guy. What I like about him as a GM is you call him and say, what are you thinking of doing? And some guys, they beat around the bush. And my favorite guy to deal with was Paul Holmgren, because Paul Holmgren would say, I need a left wing. I'm interested in these 3 guys from your team, and I would move these 5 guys from my team. So you know right away if there's a fit. Right away you're in your trade talk. You're saying to yourself, okay, there's a fit here. Other guys, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. And would you move this guy? No, I don't know. And Paul Holmgren and Ronnie Caron was the same way in St. Louis. He'd say, this is what I need. Here are the guys I'm interested in, and here are the guys that you have – the guys I'm interested in that you have, and here are the guys on my team I would move. Mm-hmm. And so right away, you're in a trade talk. You're not fishing. You're talking trade. You're talking names. And that's what I respected about Jimmy, is you got to names right away. Like, he wouldn't call you with an idle call like fishing, you know, because sometimes you're fishing for a certain fish, you're using a certain lure. And some guys just are drifting around on the boat, seeing what they can encounter. And Jimmy was always, here's what I need, here's what I like on your team. And that's how I tried to be as a GM. I'd say, look, I need a right winger, and we would do it priority-wise. So some guys would wait and say, okay, we want Jeff Merrick, and we can't get Jeff Merrick. We'll just wait, and we'll keep working on them. Maybe they'll lose a couple games. We always ranked the guys we liked and said, okay, here's the right wing we like best. Here's the right wing we like second best. Here's the right wing we like third best. And we would take the first deal, different prices, obviously, but mm-hmm. we would take the first deal we got. We would fill that hole as quickly as we could rather than drift along with a team that needed a right wing. And that's how Jimmy does business. And I really respect him, and I really like him.
Elliot Friedman joins us from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, it's been close to 24 hours since the news broke about Jim Rutherford. What have you been able to cobble together about what happened here and maybe what's next for the Penguins?
I think the biggest thing is just how much it caught people by surprise, Jeff. There was a company-wide email that went out from Rutherford about an hour before it was announced, and they were surprised. He did some business yesterday. He signed Yannick Weber to a free agent contract, and he did it. So there were a lot of people who were absolutely shocked. I do think there was something. I think that the thing that, without really obviously being in the room to figure out exactly what it was, it's possible that, some people in Pittsburgh and Rutherford kind of disagreed on how big a deal it was. I think like David Morehouse made it pretty clear, the president and CEO, yesterday on a Zoom call, that they still see themselves in win now mode. But what happened might have been a disagreement on how to get there. And, I do think that if you've seen Rutherford's quotes, he said, it's time. And I do think that it's quite possible that in a time where he's been very careful and for good reason, he just looked at the philosophical disagreement and said, it's just not going to work at this time between these two, between one vision and the other vision. And to me, I think it came down to some degree of that. And I think there are people in the Pittsburgh organization who were surprised, absolutely, because, sometimes maybe they weren't aware of it, or, Berkey, you've been in this chair. Sometimes, you disagree with someone over philosophy, but you don't think it's a big deal. It's just a disagreement, and to the other person, it's a bigger disagreement than you realized.
Elliot Berkey tipped his hand a little bit by saying he's excited to see what's next for Jim Rutherford. So is this the last that we've seen him in the NHL, or do you see him, tagging on with another team in the near future?
Anthony, I think that's his call. There have been some stories written, and if you've heard him talk, he has been very careful during this time. And again, he's in his 70s for good reason. He doesn't leave his home much. He doesn't really travel. I think a lot of that could depend by how comfortable he feels with where we go in the world. Do we reach a point where, quote unquote, we get back to normalcy? But I think in a lot of ways, he can probably write his own ticket. He's won 3 Stanley Cups. Does he want to be a GM again? I think there'll be people interested. Does he want to be more of a president's role? There could very well be people interested. Does he want to be an advisor? There would definitely be people interested. Anthony, I hope he finds a spot, because he makes the job interesting. As I heard what Berkey was saying there, and only disagreeing with the point that nobody would ever want Jeff Merrick, I think that when he's one of those guys who's still old school. I want to make a trade. Don't tell me how hard it is to make a trade. I want to make a trade. And I think the sports business needs that. People feed off that. We love it. And so that's why I hope there's room for him someday.
I like the fact that he fishes with big lures. Like some of these guys nibble around the outside of their team, and he throws those big lures, and he's going for the big muskie, not fishing for perch, not fishing for walleye.
Go big or go home.
So my question for you, Freege, is were you surprised or in any way about the discipline that was handed down with regard to John Chyka?
I didn't know what to expect, Berkey, to be perfectly honest. I really had no idea because, you know, I knew that there was a lot of enmity between Chyka and the Coyotes. It's like a divorce that goes really bad. You know, you've really got to love each other to hate each other. And, like, that ownership group, Chyka found them, and they really believed in him, and they really pushed him. And, you know, they were really upset that he would leave. And so it got really ugly. And, you know, one of the things that people warned me was that Bettman would do whatever he could to prevent the sanctity of contracts. Like, he would say, like, other GMs would say to me, Bettman will protect the owners on this one. He will want contracts protected. And also, because people were upset at Chyka for what happened last year with the testing, it's not like it would have been hard for Bettman to throw the book at him. You know, I heard he had everything documented. You know, I haven't, like, he's gone quiet. I have not spoken to him in a long time. But the one thing that people told me was he had everything documented. And so I didn't know what to expect. I really had no idea. But what I researched, Berkey, was what's Bettman's history with this stuff? And, you know, the one that a lot of people remember was Keenan. And in 1994, when Keenan left the Rangers for St. Louis, Keenan was suspended 60 days, but that was over the summer. He was fined $100,000. The Blues were fined $250,000, and the Red Wings, who tried to sign him, were fined $50,000. So that's kind of the only comparable you really had. And so this one basically amounts to 17 months. From the day he left Arizona to the day he's eligible to be hired, it's 17 months. And some people said that's really steep, but others said to me, you know what, he was under contract with the Coyotes, I think, 4 more years. So actually, he gets out. Now, I think the biggest thing, Brian, is are people going to hire him? Are they going to want to, after everything that's happened in the last year, are people going to want to hire him? Now, I believe New Jersey had something, and I don't know where that is. I think it's up to the Devils right now. I think that, you know, what do they want to do? What's their position? Are they still going to go forward with this? I think they're the team that everybody's going to watch when this is over.
If we could use this to sort of dovetail back to Pittsburgh for one follow-up with the Penguins, and then we can move on to other issues for each. John Chyka is an ex-general manager right now, frozen, suspended by the NHL. What other, though, candidates could be out there for the Pittsburgh position? Like, who should we be looking at right now?
Well, I think that who you look at is there's the two guys with Pittsburgh connections, Botterill in Seattle. He could have gone back this summer. He didn't. He had the opportunity to return. For the reasons we just talked about, Fitzgerald, he's got a multi-year deal of employment in New Jersey, but he's got a one-year deal to be the GM. Like, I wonder if New Jersey uses this opportunity to lock him up. I don't know. I'm just talking out of my head. But I think those are two names. But a name I did hear last night that I think is going to be of interest to them is going to be Chris Drury. I think they have interest in Drury. Now, Drury has had the opportunity to interview or has interviewed before in places like Buffalo, Minnesota, and Florida. And I think at one point this year he was Florida's number one choice. Obviously, it didn't happen. I just think it comes down to what he wants to do, but I did hear his name last night. But I'll tell you, I heard the Penguins got bombarded by people yesterday. Just, what are you guys thinking here? Who do I need to talk to? Things like that.
Right. off of that page, and this is something that we discussed on the podcast this week, and listen, there's a new bit of information out there with another athlete, Deshaun Watson, Texans quarterback, very public, I want out of town. On the podcast, because we're talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois and how he got his way out, you know, the game against Tampa and the lack of effort sort of forced the hand of Jarmo Kekalainen, and you brought up James Harden of Houston and how he got out of town. Are we seeing, and we've seen it now in three separate sports, are we seeing the new way for the athlete to get what he wants to get out of town?
Well, athlete empowerment has grown this generation. There's no question about that. I think the Dubois thing, it's interesting. Like, I think he was really upset by the radio interview that Tortorella did after camp started. I think that was something that really bothered Dubois. So I think it just added to everything that kind of happened in that whole situation. You know, I love football. I love the NFL. I've been really interested in this Deshaun Watson story. If you follow that, like, the Houston Texans were a rapidly growing organization in the last few years, and they blew it all up in the last two or three seasons. They made bad trades. If you've read Sports Illustrated's reporting on Jack Easterby in the organization, they've really, there's an individual there who's a lightning rod who it looks like has really upset the players. And I think, yes, there's more athlete empowerment than ever, Jeff. But I think what I'm learning more and more is that the most important thing an organization can do is be consistent. Just make smart decisions as much as you possibly. Like, everyone's going to make mistakes. But do you have a good process? Like, do you like, some athletes, some players, you're always going to say, hey, you stand in line, you don't have that power. But some players are going to have that power, and Deshaun Watson is one of them. And you have to be willing to understand and say, hey, ultimately, Deshaun, we make the decisions, but here's what we're thinking. And I think with young players today, they say why. And, you know, you don't always want to have to answer the question why all the time. But I think what people want, it's not just athletes, I think it's people, they want to believe that you have their best interests in mind. They want to believe that you have a plan and you'll try to stick to it for the most part. And they want to believe that your decision-making process makes sense. And what I see in Houston is a situation that didn't make sense. And what I see in Columbus, and I'm beginning to believe more than ever, is that Dubois was just worried that if he signed there long term and more players left, that he'd be kind of caught alone there. And I think that was the reason. And I just think we're going to see more and more people think like that. I just believe the days of athlete empowerment or player empowerment, especially at a younger age, they're here, and we've just got to deal with them.
Well, Elliot, don't you think that, you know, if you're Dubois' camp, aren't you sort of upset just to how this transpired? He's not the first player to ask for a trade or last. But again, we got Dubois, and we got, Tortorella doing, full features on how much he sucks. Isn't that now discouraging the players now to request trades publicly? Because we've seen what happened in this situation now where he's sort of going into Winnipeg with a target in his back with the media.
Well, I think, Anthony, that's going to happen anytime you ask for a trade. Like, there'll be, like, it's sort of like, you know, if you ask for a trade, there's going to be people who understand it and there's going to be people who don't understand it. Like, that's just life, and you have to deal with that. I do think that Dubois was upset about the radio interview. I do. I think that he thought that it didn't need to happen, and it kind of exposed him even more. And I do think it contributed to the way that he handled things at the end. I just think that it shows you that in this day and age, Anthony, everything is magnified. And it's also like you never know in the social media world. Like, there have been times, Anthony, where I press send on a tweet or I reported something, and I'm like, this is going to be a firestorm, and nothing happens.
Yeah.
And then there's other times I'm like, nobody's going to care about this, and it's a fiasco. Like, we all ride the wave, right? We just don't know how anyone is going to react to anything or how anything is going to be handled. And we have to be prepared for that. But I do think when you ask for a trade, you're going to have to recognize that not everybody is going to forgive you for it, and that's life.
Yeah, I think that's right. The alarming thing to me as a former GM is, and I worked in big markets and I worked in small markets. I worked in a small market, two of them actually, Hartford and Anaheim. The alarming thing for me is the disturbing trend is the guys that appear to be asking out are asking out of smaller markets.
Yeah.
And that's alarming to me.
Well, you know, Berkey, like, you know, look at, like, it's amazing. Like, Toronto is what? The fourth or fifth biggest market in Canada, right? And for a long time, it was considered a big market in the NHL and a small market in the NBA. Like, Berkey, you were here. You worked for this organization. You knew how hard this team had to work to get players. And it was, I think Toronto is a fantastic city. I'm really proud. I've lived most of my life here. I'm a very happy Torontonian. But, like, and it bugged me the way other people talked about it. Like, when Doug Christie wanted out, my reaction was like, if you don't want to be here, leave. I think this is a fantastic city. I think in the NBA, it's been a huge problem because I think there's a lot of fan bases who feel that their players aren't appreciated by the stars, and it's bad for your league. And I do think it's bad for a league in general, but also as a human being, Berkey, like if I don't like it at Sportsnet, I can leave. I should go find another job. And I guess if an athlete feels that strongly about it, why shouldn't they? Or another place to go work.
Yeah, and the difference would be, to me, is those guys make a lot more money than you do, and the system is designed to award your rights. You don't, okay, so you want to work in Halifax. You go to Halifax and you work. Mm-hmm. But the way in all pro sports, you don't get to pick where you play. And typically in baseball, it's 6 years of major league service, I believe, still. And you get some arbitration rights in hockey and baseball, but basically you have to stay in that marketplace, and that's what makes it work. That's why Tampa could win a World Series. If you know, to me, that's the alarming part, is the system is designed, and they're paid handsomely. It's not like they're working for minimum wage. They're paid handsomely, uh-huh. And this is where you go, and then you get your big payday. And this is why Stewie wants all the players to get paid, and he's nuts, but I the guys that I want to get paid, like Torrey Krug, I'm glad he got paid. Petrangelo, I'm glad he got paid. They did their time. They went to their markets. They worked for whatever they could make there. They were paid well, but they got the big payday. I never mind when the UFAs get paid, but this is an alarming trend if people are going to say, nope, this isn't working for me.
Well, you know, Berkey, like, look what's going on right now with GameStop out there. Like, what's going on in the markets these days? Like, we are in a place in the world of disruption, and you know, like, you know, you're a little bit older than me, but I'm 50. Like, I better get used to the fact that there's another generation of people that are saying, this isn't acceptable for me anymore. And some things I agree with and some things I disagree with. I think that's life. We're not going to agree with anyone, but everyone about all things. But the bottom line is, like Anthony, like the story you did with Arthur Staple the other day about Josh Hosang, I thought you raised a really interesting point that there's hundreds of players coming like this now. And this is the way the generation is. And you can sit there and you can be angry old person, or you can say, like, I better deal with this because this is the way the next workforce is going to be. So what that's all you can really do, Berkey, is it's like this next generation, their values are different than yours and mine. Some of these things I agree with, some of these things I disagree with, but I better realize and understand what the reality of the situation is.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, an industry that's going through that is the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, World War II, they said take that hill, and everyone grabbed their rifle and charged up the hill. Now you got to tell the soldiers why the objective's important, how many soldiers will be involved, what the expected casualty rate is. Because you're right, they say why. And that's what you talk to coaches in the NHL that have been around for a while. They say that's the biggest difference. You have to explain everything to these kids. That's not all bad.
Yeah, and I agree. So we just have to understand that I understand the system is designed a certain way, and it's a CBA. It's a collectively bargained agreement. So you have to the rules are set. And for some people, they're set before they get into the NHL even. But not everyone's going to fall in line. Like, you know, we all have a little rebel in us. We all like to tweak our bosses and our employers. And, you know, like some people are willing to tweak more than others.
And let me interject, Elliot. Sorry to interrupt you. But
just
so people understand, entry-level conditions are set by every union everywhere. Like if you're an electrician, I don't know what electricians get paid in Toronto, but I know if you're an apprentice, you make X, and if you're a master electrician, you make Y. And you have to work your way through that wage scale. That's not unique to pro sports.
Mm-hmm. You know, getting back, it sort of dovetails into the last question I have for you, Frigella. Stewie's point about Josh Hosang, and there are more players like this coming, so you better learn how to adapt to it. I mean, you can do one of two things given this reality. You can try to, you know, wrap the world with rubber, or you can put on a pair of shoes. Like, the smart thing is just put on a good pair of shoes and learn how to walk around in all this, because it's here. The next question becomes, how close are we to seeing in hockey? This will be the last question for you. How close in hockey do you think how close are we to seeing players sync up their free agency and go as combos or trios and try to load up on teams?
Well, we kind of did it. We kind of saw it once with Suter and Parise, right?
And Korea and
Temu and right, Paul Kariya.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing that was different about that one is, you know, they took, like, especially Salami took less than market value to make that one work. Like, Suter and Parise did not take less than market value. They got huge deals to go to Minnesota. But you're right. Like, those are good. Like, you know, I liked a tweet last week when Harden's first game in New Jersey, and if I remember correctly, Irving didn't play. It was Harden and Durant. I'm just looking at it now. The TV ratings for that game, I'm just finding it right here. They were enormous, enormous. And, like, so I sit here and I say, is it a bad thing if that happens, or is it a good thing? Like, does hockey actually need this? Here it is, from Vincent Goodwill. Last night's Brooklyn-Cleveland game was the most viewed game in the U.S. and the fourth most viewed game globally on League Pass, which is their center ice this season. Viewers were up 115%, and watch hours were up 227% versus the per-game averages for the season. Here's my question, guys. Should we be rooting for this? Do we need this in hockey?
The problem is the scale of the markets. The problem is the NBA has had players loading up on teams. Excuse me, when I'm taking my talents to South Beach or whatever.
Yep.
They've had players loading up in the last few years, but they never go to small markets. They never go to Memphis. They never go to Minneapolis.
Well, Berkey, how much do you think it would? Would you think it would help or hurt interest in the NHL if, say, for argument's sake, Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews played together, or Nathan MacKinnon and Sidney Crosby played together?
Well, you're talking about, would that benefit one team, and would it benefit television? And to me, that shouldn't be the first question. It should be, do you have a competitive league? And you can't get into a series of haves and have-nots. You can't. That's not sustainable.
I don't know. Hockey got really popular with measuring stick teams, though, and dynasties.
What do you think, Stewie? You're quiet out there.
I think dynasties are terrible for sports.
I think you can't get two star players because there's not enough money to go around. And I'm not taking a haircut to go play with my buddy. And guys are pretty quiet when it comes to, well, what are you making and what am I making? In NBA, it's a lot more open. And in hockey, it's, you know, you want to play with your buddy, but you also want to make all of the money at the same time. So
yeah, and
we can go fishing. We can go fishing in the summer.
These NBA NBA guys, they did take pay cuts to go to Golden State. Now, mind you, pay
yeah,
cut
you
from,
could take a pay cut. Yeah, you,
pay okay, cut from
instead
40
of making
million
47
to 20.
Million, yeah,
yeah
47 million, they're making 30.
But it is admirable that a player would take less money. Now, mind you, 20 to 40 or whatever, that pay cuts, it's not like you're having a tag sale in your front yard. But it is admirable that teams, that players would go for less money and try to win.
I think it's coming. I really do. I still think that there's going to be something in the near future where at least a couple of players try this. Great stuff, Friedge. You're released. You're done. Thank you as always.
Have a great day, guys.
Good speak dribble, Friedge.
There he is, Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. It's the Leafs and the Oilers. Tonight we'll get on that page as Hockey Central continues. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Do you want to be featured on Hockey Night in Canada? We're giving you the chance to be part of the Rogers Hometown Hockey Viewing Party, where you can virtually meet Ron McLean, Tara Sloan, and NHL alumni. Be the fifth caller through right now to win. Call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590 for toll-free, or *590 on your cell. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590. You can also enter for the chance to win a spot in the Rogers Hometown Hockey selection of the on the Sportsnet app. Find details at sportsnet.ca/590. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Anthony Stewart. Game day again for the Maple Leafs as they face off tonight, Stewie, against the Edmonton Oilers. Two teams right now going in different directions. What interests you tonight about this game? The Maple Leafs coming off a couple of big wins against the Calgary Flames.
I'm interested to see if Connor McDavid goes off against the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think he only has the one goal against Toronto in the two games last week. And Justin Hall's done a pretty good job shutting him down. But again, he's one of the premier players in the league, if not the premier player in the league. Can the Leafs really, really shut him down tonight? And I think it's going to be tough. Toronto's on a long road trip here. I could see McDavid easily going off for a 4-point, 5-point night. But at the same time, the Maple Leafs, they've been playing pretty good team defense as a whole. What I liked about the game last night, the other night, they had a 3-1 lead. Calgary ended up coming back, but they didn't panic. They didn't take any unnecessary risk. They played the game the right way, and their big guns came on near the end of the game. So it'll be an interesting game, but McDavid, you can't keep him quiet all 10 games this season, and he's going to go off sooner than later.
What do you think, Berkey?
Well, first, we have some really cool contests right now.
Yeah, pretty cool.
You get to meet Joe Thornton.
I mean, Joe Thornton.
How do I register for that? I know Joe. I met him.
No, you could spend some time
with him. That'd be cool.
Well, you can probably FaceTime Joe Thornton yourself. You did try to trade for him after all once upon a time.
Oh, but this is cool. Backyard rink? Are you kidding me?
I know.
Get a chance
right?
to be on the Ask the Panel and Hometown Hockey. These are cool things. No, yep. for the Leafs, I'm impressed with their, like Stewie said, the other night it gets to 3-3 and you're thinking, oh, here we go. And they didn't panic and they kept to the game plan. I think I'm really impressed with the emergence of Justin Hall. And this is a guy who's quietly becoming a really important player for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I like their depth, the fact that they can put guys in, Joey Anderson, call up guys from the taxi squad. Robertson gets hurt, they plug him in. I think Jimmy Vesey's really playing well. They're on a really good roll. And Edmonton, to me, I watched their team, and I think they really thought their decor would be better than they've been to this point. Now, I think they're young guys, and they'll get better. But I really thought they were taking a step forward with a solidified decor, and they thought Turris would really help. But he hasn't done anything yet for them.
You know, it's got to be tough and in a lot of ways frustrating as well. And we can personalize this with your 2007 Anaheim Ducks. One of the wonderful things about that team, a couple of things. One, that team could play any way you wanted. And two, you had guys whose talent windows synced up. Like, when you look at the Edmonton Oilers, you say to yourself, this forward group right now, specifically top six, is really good. And on the horizon, that Edmonton blue line, last year with the emergence of Ethan Bear, and you can see steps taken by Caleb Jones. But you have, you know, players like Evan Bouchard and Philip Roberg, but they're still a few years away. Like, you know, eventually that defense is probably going to be a really solid blue line, but it's not there yet. But you have this forward group, this top six, that's elite. As a general manager, like, you're Ken Holland here, Berkey. A, that's frustrating. B, what do you do about it?
Well, first off, you're right about the talent window syncing up, the Anaheim team. The other thing we had was we had a couple of veterans that our team really wanted to win for. They really wanted to get Chris Pronger a cup. Had this great career, we never had a cup. They really wanted to get Tamu a cup. And that's a motivating factor. I think it was a factor when Washington won, that Ovi had this great career but no cup. So that was one thing. But the talent window syncing up, that is a critical thing. And I don't know why Bouchard isn't playing. I really don't. I think that I would play him. And Broberg is playing overseas. They get him back, he's going to be a legit guy. They've got help coming. They've got to wait. Now, I think the miscalculation they made, and I haven't asked Kenny this, Kenny Holland, I think the miscalculation they made was that their D-Corps was young and would take a step forward as a group, and they haven't. Now, I say yet. They haven't yet. I believe they'll get better. And I think that you can see they're getting a little bit better as we go along here. But, man, their special teams are letting them down now. Last year, their special teams were special. Yeah. They were in the top two in penalty kill and power play, which is virtually impossible to do. You know, our rule is you want to be somewhere around top 10 in both if you can. But even if you're better than 15 in both, you're better than most teams. Most teams tend to have one really good unit. Like, the power play is really good and the PK is just average or poor. But what they did last year is they won a lot of games on special teams, and that ain't happening.
You know, this is an interesting matchup, and it can go one of two ways. And I'm a big boxing fan, and that, you know, Hagler-Hearns, that Vegas fight, those three rounds, three of the best rounds you're ever going to see in boxing.
I met Marvin Hagler once.
Oh, just like one of the coolest boxers ever. Where'd you meet Hagler?
Well, I met him twice, or I met him once. So I was at the American Hockey League Booster Club convention. I kid you not, on Cape Cod, and they asked me to come and speak. And Marvin Hagler was training. He used to train on Cape Cod.
So good.
And they invited him in. He came in and said a few words. He, very charming guy. Really impressive guy, but a little wee guy. Like, I could have eaten pumpkins off his head. Like, he's like 5'9". But, like, here's a guy who could kill you, right? He's 5'9", and he could kill you. Oh, yeah. And then another time, he came in and met with the law firm I worked at about representing him. And they told me to stand by if they wanted me to come in and close the deal, but I never got to talk to him. He wasn't interested in what we had to say, so he left. So
he had he had that great line. It's funny because Stu and I were just talking about Hagler. Yeah, that's weird. Yesterday, you know, the phenomenon of, you know, getting on top as a fighter and what happens to you, like what changes. And his line was, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, it's tough to get up for those 5 a.m. runs when you're wearing silk pajamas. And it's a line that sort of always stuck with me. But I always loved, you know, that we all loved that fight. And I can remember getting really excited. Stu, you can talk to this. I remember getting really excited for Mayweather and Pacquiao. It was a couple years too long. Geez. They should have been a good fight, but it wasn't. It was two guys that really didn't do much. And I watched the Oilers Leafs game, worked it last week with Berkey, and it seemed like it was just two teams that realized the other team was loaded with firepower, so didn't want to give them any chances. What do you expect tonight out of these two teams? We want Hagler-Hearns, but are we going to get Mayweather-Pacquiao?
Well, I think with Toronto, they got to have a controlled chaos, and they've been doing that most of the season. I think what's different about this roster than rosters in the past season is there's no real guys on show-me deals where they're worried about, I got to run numbers, I got to get on the power play because I need to put up my 50, 60 points and get my big, big ticket. Most of these stars, they're paid. They're locked in for a bunch of years, so they don't have to worry about points. So I think Sheldon Keefe has sort of pounded that message through. Hey, everyone's paid. We're young. We got to start winning now and start playing the system. So especially on the back end there, there's guys that got their deals. We know Riley's going to get his money eventually, all of the money. But there are guys that are coming in, playing the game the right way because they're worried about winning. As opposed to before, it was about the numbers. I need to get my numbers, and winning is secondary. So I like the mix. They did a lot of addition by subtraction and brought in some solid veteran guys that play the game the right way. And I think it has a trickle-down effect for the rest of the roster.
I got to tell you about the Pacquiao fight. We were in the playoffs against Anaheim in Calgary.
Yep. Yep.
And I went to Gio, our captain, Mark Giordano, and I said, you know, you guys want to watch the fight? And this is in my book, by the way, if anyone wants to buy my book. And so Gio said, yeah. So we had to pay the pay-per-view charged you. If you have it in a hotel, they charge you by the viewer.
Yeah.
So we had, you know, the 30 players who were carrying extra guys, playoffs. We had our staff, our coaches. Some of the families were in. So it cost us $7,000 to rent that fight. And then we put on a nice meal, another $3,000. So we dropped $10,000 on the fight. And I said to Gio, this will pump the team up. And then it was just a dog of a fight. I remember Gio said afterwards, he said, thanks. But he said, I don't think that did anything for morale.
Yeah, we're on a three-game losing streak after. The name of the book is, of course, Burke's Law, available online and at your bricks and mortar stores as well. Man, I think Edmonton's one of those teams that when we look at players like Connor McDavid, like you just talked a second ago, Brian, about teams wanting to win for a specific player. Not that I think that the Oilers are auditioning for Connor McDavid to stay in Edmonton, but what is this? Like, this is Connor McDavid, like, prime. Like, this is like Art Ross, Hart Trophy. You know, if he gets far in the playoffs, Conn Smythe Trophy, Connor McDavid. How much of that is in Ken Holland's mind right now that we need to take steps here? Like, we have this, you know, Ferrari in our driveway. Like, let's put the right fuel in it and let's get this out on the road.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Kenny did some stuff this summer to alleviate concerns about their ability to win. He brought in some, you know, he thought he had a legitimate third line with Kyle Turris. That hasn't worked out yet. He hasn't done much. And I like Kyle Turris. I'm not picking on him, but he has not accomplished much so far. And I think they thought their D group would take a step forward, and they haven't yet. Again, I say yet. Mm-hmm. But to me, I think that was part of it was, well, let's make the whole group more competitive. Let's get better as a team. And he trusted his goaltending, and of course, Mike Smith got hurt, and Koskinen's just been okay, and it's not working for them right now. But I say yet. Like, I like that team. I just, right now, they're stuck in the mud. They're just in a, and teams do that. Teams go through funks, and teams have bad starts. And mm-hmm. and I wonder about the conditioning of some of these guys, if they came in shape, and if it was what the team wanted. But I still believe Kenny Holland will fix it. But for sure, that's part of it. I think the moves he made this year were designed to say, look, we're going to move this thing forward. We're going to get the Ferrari out of the driveway.
You can't help but think as well, and we'll go to break on this one, what would have happened if they were successful in getting Jacob Markstrom? It seemed as if they were of the mind that that was their number one target and they were going to get him. And Calgary comes in and scoops him up from under their nose.
And a little side note, I know we're going to a break, but we lost a goalie GM. There's hardly any goalie GMs. Jim Rutherford,
that's right. Yeah. So, you know what? There's even fewer goalie coaches.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not a position that has historically lent itself well.
Grant Fuhr, where are you at?
Going behind the bench. All these guys. Like, how many, like, Emil Francis, the Cat, was, you know, one of the greats, and we think of Patrick Waugh and Glenn Hanlon, but, like, really, Jacques Martin, like, you really count on, you know, not many more than two hands. How many goalie head coaches?
After the break, I'll tell you a quick Emil Francis story after the break.
All right, we're gonna get a story about the Cat next as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, so more on that Joe Thornton contest. Tune in every weekday for keywords. Text them to 590-590 to enter. The more keywords you collect, the better your odds are to win a spot in the video chat with Joe. Your next keyword is block. Text block to 590-590 right now to enter. Hear your next keyword at 420. That is during writer's block. For details on how to meet Jumbo Joe, visit sportsnet.ca/590. All right, Berkey, we've got about 2 minutes. Emil Francis, I always love a good story about the cat. What do you have?
I have been so lucky to work with some executives of great stature, like Cliff Fletcher. Cliff Fletcher, a wonderful man.
Yes.
But I worked in Hartford for Emil Francis. He was the president of the team, the cat. He's from North Battleford, and he told me a story one day. When he was 16, he was such a good goaltender that he played for the senior team. And senior hockey was a big deal in Western Canada back then. And so the big games were on Saturday night, and they would ask him to play a net, even though he was 16. And the pay he got was a live chicken or a dozen eggs. So before, someone would have to pick him up because he couldn't drive. So this farmer would come and pick him up. He'd throw his gear in the back of the truck. He'd ask his mom, do you want a chicken or do you want the eggs? And sometimes she'd say, well, get a chicken. We'll have chicken for dinner tomorrow. And he'd come home with a live chicken in a burlap bag. Or he'd come home with a dozen eggs, and he said the most terrified he was driving home after the game around those dirt roads in Saskatchewan, and he's got the dozen eggs on his lap, making sure none of them break. What a great man.
And he was, I don't know if he invented it, but he certainly popularized it in the NHL. He certainly played with it a lot playing in Saskatchewan Junior League, where I think he used a first baseman's glove and then modified that, and that became one of, if not the first, as we understand it now, catcher's mitts.
Yeah,
in the National Hockey League. That's that goes all the way back to the cat, who is, by the way, still with us at the age of 94.
And I'll tell you a story about him on another show about him doing working as an altar boy.
All right, well, stay tuned for that one. Stewie, great job as always, both last night and this afternoon. It is the Leafs and the Oilers tonight on Sportsnet West. Berkey, oh, always appreciate the stories. Oh, by the way, quick plug. The book is called Burke's Law.